This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
Central Podcast. Yeah, we did it again. What do we do? We recorded. That's what we did.
On time.
There is no Travis tonight. He is on special assignment investigating reports of a zombie outbreak in Hollywood. But fortunately, I am here. And of course, the man, the myth, the legend, Ronnie is here.
I am here.
And that's all that matters.
Yeah.
What's up, Ronnie? What's new?
Oh, there's lots of new things.
Is there?
I don't know. There's one new thing that we need to talk about.
What's that?
The Beyonders book.
The Beyonders.
Yeah.
This sounds awesome. What is it?
It's by Paul Jenkins and Wesley St. Clair, who did the art on Fujitsu.
That's right. Man, you're good with the normal names.
I know, see?
Yeah, so The Beyonders is coming out in August. It's a new book, as Ronnie said, by Jenkins St. Clair. Looks like high fantasy adventure.
Yeah.
It looks awesome, dude. I don't think they showed any interior images, but oh, yeah, there is. I just see a preview agent right now. Yeah. It looks cool. The covers look awesome.
Yeah.
The covers look really, really good.
It kind of looks like Da Vinci Code-ish.
Yeah, a little bit.
Which, I mean, I'm not saying that that's a bad thing.
No, yeah. I like Da Vinci Code. I'm looking at the preview images. One of the panels has an I Want to Believe poster in the background.
Yep, I see that too.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's cool. I'm excited. We talked a little bit about this before we started recording, but they're billing this as the first YA book. Now, Ronnie, what did you say about that?
I thought that was kind of weird because I thought Super Zero would be considered their first.
Correct!
Yes!
That's what I thought too. So that's a little odd, but that's cool. That's fine. If that means I can maybe bring this book to my kids and read it with them or have them read it, then I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that. I think also, you know, like as the company evolves, you want to change your messaging a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think there's a lot more people reading Aftershock now than there were back then.
For sure. Yep.
So I think it makes sense to say it's the first YA. And maybe they never build Super Zero as a YA book. I don't remember.
Yeah, that's a good point too.
Yeah,
because that was a first wave book, we'll say.
Yeah. So. Yep. Exactly. So tonight it's not going to be just Ronnie and I. We're going to have a guest.
Oh,
Mike
yeah.
Martz is going to be chatting with us, and actually he already chatted with us through the magic of podcasting. He's going to be chatting with us tonight. And we had an interesting discussion with him. So if you want to listen to that, stay tuned. He is, of course, the editor-in-chief at Aftershock. And we talked about kind of where Aftershock's been over the last couple of years, how they got started, what the plans are for the future. And, of course, I had to talk about Shock.
Oh, yeah. And it was real fun, too.
Yeah, it was awesome. Mike was great.
Yeah.
Mike was great.
Yeah.
All right, Ronnie. We have one book to discuss before we talk to Mike. And that book is Dark Arc, number 6. This is Cullen Bunn writing with Juan Doe on art. And who am I missing? Oh, Ryan Hill on letters, of course. Of course. How could I miss that?
Yeah.
There's no Travis, so there's no nutshell recap because Ronnie and I don't do that. That's what we have Travis for. So we're just going to talk about this book. Give me your overall impressions of Dark Arc, number 6.
Overall, I think it prolonged the story nicely. Like, it gave us some back history without, you know, giving us everything up front.
Mm.
And it's Juan Doe on art, and that's all I need to say about that.
That's right.
So, but there's a couple things in it that I did enjoy, though. Like, I like seeing that he had to, like, even his kids questioned him and what he was doing.
Yeah, right.
I mean, all kids question their parents, but, you know, when you're billed as an outcast and you haven't went into town for whatever, then. And I think I kind of, I don't know if this was obvious or not, but crazy theory, I think the people that they recruit to help them is the people that serve as food in present time line.
I think I'm good with that. I had the same thought, actually. This is actually, I think this might be my favorite issue so far. I really like the fact that we went into the backstory of how we got this second dark arc.
Yeah.
Because we get to learn about Noah's Ark and how everyone thinks Noah's crazy because he's building the Ark and it never rains there. And I can never remember the guy's name, but he's like, you know, I'm going to build an Ark too. Like, we need to get help because the rain's coming. And if we don't get this underway now, we're not going to make it.
Yeah.
And so we get a lot of that through flashbacks. And I thought that was really well done because it adds a little extra to the biblical story. And I think that's something that Cullen Bunn does really well.
Yeah.
What was that book that he did? The Goddamned?
Nope. That was Jason Aaron.
That was Jason Aaron. But it gave me like the same kind of feeling. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where like it's based on these biblical stories, but you're adding a bunch of stuff extra.
Well, he did
extra.
Unholy Grail. And he's doing Brothers Dracul right now.
Yeah, I thought he had done something similar, but you're right. It might be that I'm thinking of Jason Aaron. Did Cullen not do another book like that?
If so, I'm not thinking about it offhand.
Mm.
But you're right, though. He's playing in the gray areas.
Yeah.
And I think that's what, I mean, whether you liked the other two or not or whatever, doesn't matter. But I think that's what he excels at, is the gray area part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like what Adam Glass is doing with Rough Riders.
Right.
Only different circumstances, different levels, I guess.
So one thing that I really liked about this is when the harpy and the demons, and I think they're flies, right? Or they're mosquitoes. I think they're flies.
Yeah.
They're a little big to be mosquitoes.
Yeah. Well, they're big to be flies too, but.
Well, yeah. But I thought it was funny that like insects would be on the dark arc, right? Especially annoying insects like a fly.
Yeah.
But so when they go and they leave the Dark Ark to see what they're doing at Noah's Ark, and there's some interesting stuff going on at Noah's Ark, and I want to talk about that because when they land there, Noah is walking out on the top deck with two giraffes.
Yep.
Which, I mean, does he have more than two giraffes? Because these giraffes are kind of dead.
Yep. They're kind of like Jeffrey from Toys R Us, right?
Aww. You got to keep rubbing that in, don't you?
Sorry. Yep.
Damn it.
But yeah, but, I mean, that's kind of, like you said, it brings up other questions.
Yeah. So Noah brings these giraffes to the top of the ark, and they're like, holy crap, he's sacrificing them. And then out of nowhere, freaking Kraken comes out from underneath the ark and grabs the two giraffes and eats them. And one of the demons is like, oh, let's go look closer. And he gets grabbed, of course.
Unleash the Kraken!
So, what's really interesting is I think this adds so much more depth to the story as a whole.
Yeah.
Because I think we brought it up before as we've been talking about this book, where I wonder if there's not a whole lot more going on. Because remember when the angels showed up?
Yes.
The angels didn't seem very benevolent.
Right.
They were kind of like, yeah, whatever. Like,
everything's, you know, beneath us type.
Yeah, thing. Exactly.
Yeah.
And now Noah's sacrificing animals he's supposed to be saving to the sea monster. That seems odd as well.
Yeah. So is the original story that there's supposed to be four of them and he sacrifices?
Two of each.
Two of each. And then,
that's interesting.
And then to make the good guys win, quote unquote, then, you know, the story gets retold to he saves two of each.
Well, and obviously, like, the what's the saying? History is always on the side of the winner or something like that.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Like the winner writes history.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, there's nobody else around. So who's going to know that he sacrificed all these animals? Right. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
And this also puts in some interesting caveats, whereas in the biblical story, we're led to believe that Noah is this pure, holy man. And that's why God chooses him to save humanity and the quote unquote good animals. Mm-hmm. But maybe that's not necessarily the case. And maybe Noah didn't even get a message from God.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Maybe that's the reason why the angels don't give a crap about anybody. Because maybe in this story, God doesn't either.
To get Colin on here and talk about
it. No kidding.
Because, yeah, that's some deep stuff, right? Because if you are or you and your family are the only humans left on Earth because of the Great Flood, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when it's over and the world starts getting repopulated again, you can tell your story however you want, because not only did the Earth get wiped clean, but so did your past.
Absolutely. Yeah, nobody's going to know. And we haven't seen anything from Noah yet, right? All we know is that everyone thinks he's crazy. But I think as this arc progresses, no pun intended, as this arc progresses, I hope we get to see a lot more of what's going on Noah's arc and what his motivations are.
Yeah. Because that only makes – it kind of makes sense that and that's the thing, is it makes organically – it works, because if there's deep water monsters, right? Mm-hmm. It's just like, say you wanted to get into a backyard where a ball went over the fence, but there's a mean pit bull over there.
Mm-hmm.
You throw some hot dogs over there so that way to distract him so you can get your ball and get back, right?
Uh-huh.
So here, the hot dogs would actually be Jeffrey the Giraffes.
Damn it!
but yeah, I mean, to Noah, it might just be logical. Or something that he has to do to get from point A to point B.
Sure.
And he might not see anything actually wrong with it.
Yep. Yeah, and I guess ultimately this, I mean, it definitely plays a lot on philosophical aspects that I don't think we want to go in depth in here.
Right,
but, you know, like, what are you willing to do in order to survive is kind of what this boils down to.
Yeah.
And I messaged you earlier about watching the new episode of The 100, mm-hmm. but like that was the key topic in that episode too. That's why you have to watch it. That show's so good.
Yeah, I will
it's
watch
so good.
It.
It is so good.
It is. It's probably one of my top three favorite shows on right now.
Oh, it's my favorite for sure. I know that for sure. Anyways, we're not talking about The 100. This is not The 100 podcast. It's the Aftershock Central podcast. The number one Aftershock podcast in the world.
That's correct.
Because we're the only ones.
Well, that and we're awesome.
That's true, too.
And we have awesome material to work with, too.
That's very true. Very, very true. What else do you want to say about this book?
I'm glad that this book came back as quickly as it did.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, sometimes you get the first arc out and then the trade, and then we might have to wait a couple of extra months longer before it starts back up again because of public publishing schedules. But yeah, like you said, the second arc, no pun intended, like you said, is kicking up and like taking the ball and running with it right off the bat.
Yep. Yep. Really, really awesome. Like I said, this is, I think for sure, my favorite issue of the series so far. And I can't wait to see where this is going. You know, when you allow a story to breathe a little bit, you can get so much more out of it than the initial impressions.
Yep.
Because I wasn't quite sold when this first came out.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, too, is like we didn't see it lasting more than six issues because its arc, you know, it's like writing a story about the Titanic. We know how it ends, right?
Yeah.
But, I mean, now with all these different threads that Cullen has thrown in there, it could go 25 issues as far as I'm concerned.
Yep. We don't know how long into the flood this is taking place, though, right?
Right.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure.
Well, I'm assuming this flashback scene here isn't very... Well, I don't know. Because when they spy on the Ark, is that taking place at the beginning of, like, issue zero, say?
No, I think that's taking place.
Real time?
Yeah, I think that's immediately after issue 5.
Okay.
Yeah, because that harpy, I mean, there were two harpies at the beginning, right?
Right, yeah.
So that harpy must be one of the same one. So I'm pretty sure this is directly happening after issue 5.
Okay.
And then, of course, the stuff before is before the flood.
Okay.
But I think this must be still fairly early on in the flood, because when they cut to Noah's Ark, it's still raining.
Yeah.
And I know it rained for 40 days and 40 nights. So it's at least in that time frame. And then I think it had quit raining for a certain period of time before they were able to find dry land.
Right.
So there's still plenty of story to be told, which is very exciting to me.
Yeah. And I mean, if this was only like 10 days into the flood, there's plenty of time left. You know, there's no countdown clock is what I'm saying.
Yep.
So, and honestly, I think that's kind of good that we don't have a countdown clock.
Mm-hmm.
Because then it can, I mean, if it's selling as good as it's selling, then we can keep going.
Yep. Man, I got so excited that one page when they're flying to the Ark and then the Harpy dives down and he's like, I must see, I must know if it's true. I was like, something's about to happen. And then you get the 2-page spread with the freaking Kraken. I was like, holy crap.
Yep. Yeah. And then you get the oh shit look.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a dumb idea anyways, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's just like, you know that there's a killer outside. Hey, let's go outside and check it out.
Yep, I agree. So this begs the question, though. Do you think that maybe... I know earlier I said something about maybe Noah never talked to God, but what if Noah also talked to the devil or whatever entity was talking to God? I wish I remember the guy's name.
The guy
that runs the Dark Ark.
Yeah.
What if they both talked to the same person?
Well,
or the same entity?
What if they talk to the opposite ones that they think they're talking to?
Oh, I like it. That is very interesting. Very, very interesting. All right, let's rate this one up, Ronnie.
All right.
What's your score?
I'm going to give it 4.5 because the writing's solid, and we're pulling threads, and we're leaving threads that we can pull later. And, I mean, it's Wando on art, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm gonna be with you on that one, dude. I think 4.5 out of 5 for me as well. This is quite a way to kick off the new arc, so. I think if you've been sleeping on Dark Arc for whatever reason, shame on you. I think now is a good time to pick it up because I think it's about to get really, really interesting.
Yep. It's going to start raining down some stuff. See what I did there?
I see what you did there. Man, all these rain and arc jokes.
We can't help ourselves. Then.
Hashtag dad jokes. Episode title. All right, so let's get Mike on here. We're going to talk to Mike for a little bit, and then we'll do an outro.
So with us today is Mike Martz. How's it going, sir?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Good.
Fantastic. So, Mike, I here's the main question I have for you.
Yeah.
You guys have been publishing now for, what, almost 3 years, right?
Yeah, almost 2.5. I think we announced the company almost 3 years ago, and then we started publishing very late 2015. So, yeah, a little over 2.5 years.
Okay. So talk to me about the transition from when you guys were first kicking off and to where you guys are today. How is the company different for you in terms of the talent you guys have and the book that you guys are putting out? How has it changed from 2015 till now?
Well, you know, I think the main difference between then and now is probably that unknown factor in terms of what's coming up and what can we expect. Has morphed a little bit, and it's morphed in a good way. You know, when we formed the company, we targeted a few specific individuals, basically strong-armed them into working with us and paid them big loads of money. No, I'm just kidding. But, you know, we had a specific strategy in mind to bring certain people in. You know, people that we loved working with, like Marguerite Bennett and Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor and Garth Ennis and Paul Jenkins, you know, all like, you know, people that both myself and Joe Pruitt had worked with in the past. And, you know, beyond that, there was a lot of unknown. And we didn't know quite how the company would be perceived, how it'd be, how people would respond to it, And that goes for fans and for retailers and for the creative community as well. Now, after doing it for 2.5 years, there's a definite rhythm that's in place, and you know we now know that the people enjoy our product for the most part. The retail community has been extremely supportive. The fans have been great, and the creative community has turned up at our door. With great ideas. And so there's a little bit less of, I don't want to call it worry, but, you know, kind of that stressful unknown of not being sure what's coming next or what we can expect. Now there's this great creative rhythm that takes place, and You know, unfortunately, we've had to, you know, turn people away from working with us, and it's not for the lack of interest or because of good ideas, but just because we've received so many good ideas and so many proposals from the creative community. So sorry, that was a little long winded, but you know, that's I think that's how things have changed in a nutshell.
No, and that, I think that's something that we've noticed. We were talking about the Shock Anthology on the last episode, and I noticed a change in the way that you guys are bringing in new creators. Because I talk to Joe. I see Joe at cons all the time. He's not too far. He's, what, like an hour and a half, 2 hours away from me. Mm-hmm. So we visit a lot of the same cons. And I talk to him every time I see him about the types of creators that are coming in. Because when you guys came in, you guys had, you know, like Garth Ennis and Warren Ellis and those kind of guys, right? Like big names. And now I think we're seeing maybe a cultivation of younger talent. Like you mentioned Marguerite. I think when Marguerite started working with you guys on Insects, she was still kind of new to the whole thing. And now she's doing all kinds of things, right? She's working over at DC, and she's got banging up on Animosity. She's got two books with you guys. You guys just brought in Zach and Lonnie. You got the new book by Zach Kaplan coming out. And yeah, I like that change.
I appreciate that. And you know, that's part of the overall strategy. I mean, one of the foundations, the pillars of our company has been story first. And we always want the ideas to take the lead. And what that has resulted in is a very fantastic mix of ideas and projects that come from the established pros, you know, who have been doing it for a while and who have a track record, like Warren Ellis and Azzarello and Jimmy Palmiotti, you know, people who have been in the industry for a while. But then we've also had this influx of, you know, the that next wave of talent. And that's all people that you just mentioned, Zach Kaplan and Zach Thompson and Lonnie Nadler. And, you know, certainly someone like Marguerite, I guess I had the benefit of kind of, you know, working with her a bit at both Marvel and DC and kind of giving her first assignment. And for me, it was easy because I saw the talent there and I knew she was going to become big. So, you know, heading over to Aftershock and forming the company, she was a no-brainer in terms of someone that I wanted to continue working with.
So how do you guys find, I don't want to use the word competition, but I'm going to use that. In terms of the types of stories that you guys are bringing out, because it seems like when you guys first brought Aftershock out, there were places where more indie creators could put their own work out. But it seems like over the last, say, year or two, we've had a lot of newer companies coming in, bringing in talent that nobody knew about, like Black Mass Studios or Vault Comics. What's the Catalyst Prime? Those kind of things. How are you guys finding your perspective on how you publish change as we see maybe people trying out stuff outside of just Marvel or DC or Image?
It's been advantageous to us in that the consumer's appetite and the consumer's interest has definitely expanded beyond the big two companies and beyond just superheroes. That's good for us. It's good for our business because the majority of our stories are non-superhero stories. You know, to this point, I think we've done maybe two, maybe three books that kind of delve into superhero territory. But even then, the superhero wasn't the main aspect of the book. As far as the competition goes, it's, you know, it's going to be a little weird hearing this, but we never really concern ourselves that much with, I guess, what's considered the direct competition to us. We go by instinct. We go by you know, the beat of our own drum, and really pick and choose the creators and projects based on the interest level to us, and if it's a story that we would like to see told. So we're not always looking over here or there to see who's doing what at what other company. What is refreshing to see, however, is that, you know, when you make a certain choice on a creator, let's use Zach and Lonnie as an example, or Donnie Cates as an example. You know, we initially saw potential in them, and we saw talent, and we saw creative spark in working with all those creators. And then to see other companies want to take a chance on them as well, only kind of reinforces that urge that you had, that instinct that you had, knowing that there was talent there. So, you know, seeing that Zach and Lonnie do books at Black Mask, or that they're writing Cable for Marvel, that's good for us, and that makes us feel good. I mean, it's reassuring to know that, you know, the faith and the potential that we saw in these guys, you know, is understood and accepted by a larger community. And certainly there's no better example of that than with Donnie Cates, where, you know, Donnie had done some work at Dark Horse and a few other places, but hadn't really blown up yet. And, you know, we met him on the convention circuit, and we had liked him, and we liked his ideas, and we batted a few things back and forth, and then finally settled on what would become Baby Teeth. And, you know, it was literally like a month after we signed the contract on Baby Teeth that he started really getting a lot of heat on God Country and Redneck. And see that happen even before our project with him came out, but after we made the deal, was really exhilarating and very rewarding.
Yeah, it seems like Donnie's a very hands-on kind of guy. I met him at C2E2 last year, and I think it was right before Baby Teeth was about to launch, or maybe, yeah, you know what? I think it was right before.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was super awesome, down to earth. And then to see him just pop out of nowhere like that, it doesn't happen very often, you know?
No, it happens every once in a while, you know, and happens with like a Scott Snyder, and it's, you know, happened now with Donnie. But, you know, that type of impact all at once with a creator, you know, it's pretty seldom that happens.
Yeah, we got a joke in our group where I read Ghost Fleet when it came out, and so the joke has become, have you read Ghost Fleet? Because every time we talk about a new book coming out, I'm like, hey, have you guys checked this out? Or anybody in our group of friends, like, hey, have you guys checked this book out? Like, I think it's going to be big. And Ghost Fleet wasn't the biggest hit for him, but it's really fantastic, and I think through that, I've been able to introduce some people to Donnie Cates, and of course, as a result, into Aftershock. You know, Ronnie and Travis and I, we do, whenever we can, we bring up Aftershock, because we think what you guys do is really important. Not just because you guys put out good books, but because the mindset that you guys have towards creating comics, I think, is something that was lacking for a while. You know, because really, you guys just want to put out the best stories, and that's important, right? Whether you sell, I mean, it's nice if you sell a million copies of a book, right? But if you have something that people read and thoroughly enjoy, and that leads into them picking up further works, then that helps everybody. That helps the comic reader, and of course, it helps you.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah, that's important. Ronnie, I'm talking too much. I'm sure you have a question.
I do. This is like from an editor standpoint, right? So when do you scale back? Like, say you have too many horror books coming out as opposed to fantasy or whatnot. Is there a certain limit that you have or that you see, or is it just best story wins and we're going to put it out and see what happens?
Well, a little bit of both. You know, we're fortunate that the projects that have been brought to us, the best of them have all kind of been from different genres and different categories and fit different needs of ours. At the same time, though, yeah, you want to be careful not to have too much of the same thing, or you want to be sure that, you know, you don't have two magic books launching around the same time, or two crime books launching around the same time. Yeah, you don't want the projects to suffocate one another, and you want each one to be able to breathe and find its own identity. So, yeah, it certainly is a part of the selection process. We've had that happen a few times where a very good idea has come in. Case in point, we had one come in recently, and it specifically involved Dracula. It came from two co-writers that I've worked with at DC Comics, and both guys that I like, and the project was quite good. But, you know, we had just you know, I think we were 2 weeks away from putting out Brothers Dracul number one. And, you know, so we had a Dracula project in the works, and, you know, Cullen Bunn is certainly a creator who's worked extremely well with us, and we've seen good results from. So we anticipated this project would the brothers Dracul would do the same. And, you know, so unfortunately, you know, under different circumstances, it would have been a project that we would have talked about taking to the next level. But in this instance, we weren't able to.
Yeah. Right. And like on the same token, I know you alluded to it before, but you guys only had, what, 2 superhero books coming out. Is that something consciously that you guys don't really want to do it? Or just, you know, you can get superheroes from here or there, but right here we're more into the bigger spectrum of stories.
It is something that specifically comes up. I mean, when I talk to creators about pitches and ideas, I will normally say we're not that into superheroes at this point in time. There are dozens and dozens of superhero books on the stands right now, and a lot of them are being done extremely well. You know, we're looking to tell different type of stories at the moment. You know, exceptions are made. You know, when Paul Jenkins came to us and told us about Alters, it certainly involved a group of superheroes, but, you know, the scope of the story was much larger than that. And, you know, so that was certainly an exception. And, you know, also something like Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor's Super Zero, you know, a young girl aspiring to become a superhero through, you know, through homemade methods. You know, there was something extremely unique to that. And likewise, we had Captain Kidd from Mark Waid and Tom Pyer. And again, it was a superhero story, but, you know, a much different approach than what we're used to seeing. You know, we don't normally encourage our creators to pitch things in that area, but if the idea is different enough or significant enough, then of course we'd be open to it.
Right. Yeah. That makes sense.
Since you're talking about different ideas, I want to talk a little bit about Shock, because I was, as Ronnie knows, I was very surprised that you guys were going to be putting this thing out. Not because I wasn't going to enjoy it. In fact, anthologies are one of my favorite types of books. But the fact that you guys were willing to take a chance on doing an anthology series, which generally don't sell as well as a miniseries or an ongoing or any sort. What was the reasoning behind this thing? How did it come about? And why did you guys think that it was a worthwhile project doing?
Well, you know, the real X factor here in Shock, the anthology, was our chief creative officer, Joe Pruitt. You know, Joe had a career doing anthologies that it did extremely well when he was at both Caliber and Desperado. Negative Burn, the anthology, earned him an Eisner. And so that's something that's always been very near and dear to him and was something that we talked about from the very, very early stages of the company. We knew that we wanted to do an anthology, and we decided to schedule it, you know, at a time when we felt comfortable that our company had, you know, reached a certain, I guess, level of acceptance within the industry and how we were perceived. And, you know, that I guess was, you know, that's how the timing came up with the project. But, you know, this was very much Joe's baby. And, you know, he was very careful about his selection of stories and creators. And, you know, I think what we ended up with was a mix that's very representative of our line as a whole, you know, very eclectic and stories of all different sorts from all different types of creators. And yeah, I mean, we couldn't be more proud of this book and how it reads and how it looks and how it's selling as well.
Are there plans on doing this again down the line, maybe? Or are you guys still doing a kind of wait and see on that?
I don't think it's a wait and see. I think it's a definite. I think we'd be silly not to. You know, this volume did very well for us. And, you know, we only had a certain amount of pages, you know, even though it was large, you know, mm-hmm. It was a certain amount of pages, and we had a bunch of other ideas and pitches that we didn't have room for and we'd like to include in some future anthology. And I'm sure we would do more. We'll have to see what type of, you know, magic recipe Joe cooks up for that.
Well, I'm happy to hear that. I'm not happy that it's going to inflate Joe's ego even more, though.
I know, that's always a danger, but unfortunately, there's no way around that.
Yeah, he's the most selfish guy I know, for sure. That's a lie.
Yeah.
No, it was great. And, you know, one thing that I noticed was there were a lot of new people in here. Some stories really stand out to me. I know we discussed like the Aaron Douglas story and the Willingham story and the Mike Zagari story that were really interesting. And they seem like stories that we'd like to see fleshed out more. So do you guys think that maybe using Shock as a launch platform for some of these stories coming in is a possibility?
Yeah, that's always the possibility. Sure. In fact, you know, we had a few writers that after submitting their work, you know, kind of had that, you know, oh, wow moment and realized that, you know, there might be a larger life to some of these stories. One particular guy that's, you know, already pushing for, you know, 3 volumes. yeah, that's a definite possibility. I mean, there's so many cool stories and characters introduced in this anthology that the potential is certainly there.
Nice. I only have one more question, Ronnie. You want to shoot one?
No, we should probably finish it up with yours since okay. Mike's on a time crunch.
Yeah, a tight time crunch. Yep. I just wanted to, if you could briefly talk about the relationship you guys have with retailers. How is that different for you as opposed to, you know, the stuff that you were doing when you were at like Acclaim or DC or Marvel or anything like that?
Yeah, it's quite different. It's been a great learning experience for me. I actually started in retail probably 27, 28 years ago, when I was a teenager before I started working at Marvel. And so, the retail community and the ways of doing things were certainly known to me. But that area of my life had kind of been absent for the last 25 years, not to date myself. starting a new company, and starting a small company is great for someone like myself who is always eager to learn new areas of the industry. It's forced me to become more familiar with everything from the ordering process to inventory to retail relations to book sales. And it's all areas that are super important to the growth of Aftershock. And so learning all that and being acquainted with it and really kind of diving into all of that has been a very, very good experience for me.
Awesome. All right. That was the last question I had. So I guess we can let you get back to work.
Yeah.
Well, much appreciated, guys.
Thanks for coming on.
Yeah. Loved coming on and appreciate the support that you guys have given to Aftershock. It means so much that, the hard work that we're doing is being understood and realized and appreciated out there. So, you know, much thanks to you.
All right. And we're back through the magic of podcasting. That was instant.
Instantaneous.
I do want to thank Mike again. I know we thanked him when we talked to him, but it was a pleasure to get to talk to him. I know we talked to Joe before, and we talked to Joe a lot offline, but it was great to talk to Mike, you know, because he's got a different perspective on the business as well.
Yep. And I'd like to get him back on sometime, like when he's not in the time crunch.
Yeah. That'd be good too. That'd be good too. All right, Ronnie. Next week, there are 2 books. Those books are Rough Riders, Ride or Die, number 4, Adam Glass, Pat O'Leaf, Gabe Eltab, and Betrothed, number 3, Sean Lewis, Steve Yui, and that's it. I think Steve does everything. Oh, and Simon Boland on letters. Of course Simon Boland does letters. Who else would do letters?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe Marshall Dillon.
Ryan Hill.
Yeah, Ryan Hill.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. All right, my bad.
So Simon Boland. I'm going to be sad next week then. When we record, because it's Rough Riders, Ride or Die, number 4. It's the last one ever.
Oh, man. See, I keep forgetting that.
Yeah.
I keep thinking it's going to be 5 issues.
Yeah. Well, the last page said final issue, so.
Dang it.
See?
The stunning conclusion of America's first team of superheroes. That is pretty sad.
Oh, yeah.
That is pretty sad. Oh, well. I think it's going to be a good week next week anyway, so.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
You know? Maybe at some point we'll get that TV series that Adam's trying to pitch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now we're cooking.
Yep.
All right. That's going to wrap it up for us this week. You can find Ronnie on the social media platform known as Twitter. He's at Rumbar316. Travis is at The Great Magnet. I'm at Geekvine. The show is at Aftershock Pod. Catch you next week. Oh.
Shock the world.